Engaging kids to understand the world they live in and activating them to change it for the better. Climate Warriors Unite. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From boardteachers.com, the workload is so heavy, teachers struggle to spend quality time with their own kids.
You know, that's true.
Don't you? Okay, I gotta ask, who's not a teacher,
right?
You spend time with all these little kids during the day. Do you want to just go home and go, leave me alone?
Okay, that's a whole other article
about whether
or not you want to come home and spend time with your kids.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay?
Because there is that effect of going, I've been with kids all day, get out of my face.
Right,
okay? Okay, I don't want to see you. Here, though, we're looking at this balance, work-life balance, right? And the idea of being a teacher, and particularly today in the workload that they have, and understanding that the workload of a teacher comes home with them.
Yeah.
And so when you bring that home with you, and you also have your own family, maybe not just kids, how about even just a spouse or something like
right.
that, right? And you bring all of that with you. You can't leave it there. How does that then affect the relationships at home? This mm-hmm. in particular, so I have my own young kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do I spend time? How do I make time? How do I, according to the person that wrote this article, how do I even, in one sense, it sounds like she goes, like, I have to fake like I'm having a good time with my daughter.
I know,
right?
And that's not okay either.
No, or you don't want to, as a parent,
no.
You know, hey, honey, remember when you were six and we had a good time playing with boats? I was really miserable and was ready to kill my principal.
Right, you don't want to
okay?
see.
Everything that went through my head at that point looked like I was some type of, you know, no, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a good place to be. So it's work-life balance issue.
Yeah.
And are there other jobs, are there certain jobs that really push that in a direction that makes it harder to balance? And so in this case, teaching all day, working with other people's kids all day, working with principals that want you to do things all day long on top of being with the kids all day, working with a schedule that didn't put in the fact that you might have to pee during the day, okay?
Little things. Like
having
that.
A lunch time that equals about 12 minutes and then recess duty for 35 minutes and then finding out that you have to then come in and go to a professional development about teaching a book that you taught 25 years ago.
Oh, true. Okay. Important.
Right. All these things mix in and then dealing with other people's kids.
Yeah.
Right. And needing to make sure that you are a nurturer, giving to those kids everything you can, because that's what great teachers do, no matter what the kid. We're doing our best to say, we're making you happy. We want you to feel awesome. We want you to feel great. And then I go home and there's Luke, my boy, when he was six, saying, Dad, let's go outside and play football. And I'm like, no. Go out and catch by yourself.
Right.
Throw it up and down like I used to when I was a kid. Okay, and then hope for not a good scenario.
No, it's
so
not.
How do we fix this? You know what? I have a feeling next story might give us an opportunity to address the issue.
From Newsday.com, Ward Melville High helps staff de-stress with relaxing music and soft lighting. District officials are touting a newly created wellness room at Ward Melville High School as a lesson in serenity, where the surroundings help teachers and staff de-stress over the course of a hectic work day.
I see the word serenity and I'm automatically thrown back to Seinfeld and George Costanza's father yelling, serenity,
serenity
no!
No!
Serenity no! This is not that kind of room.
Well, that's good.
George Costanza's father is not in the...
He's not in the serenity room yelling at you.
No, he's not in the serenity room. So here's an idea, right? We came off of the stressed out teacher and can't even bear going home to be with their own parents. Now, here's a school that said, hey, we need to help teachers balance that mm-hmm. stress that accompanies them during the day. Now, it doesn't say anything about the fact that it might contribute to a better evening. My guess is it would, though, because if you're letting go of some of that stress during the day while it's happening, you're not bringing it home with you.
Right, okay? For sure.
So you asked, why don't we all do this?
I think it sounds like a great idea. Add a soft serve ice cream machine. It's perfect.
A little soft serve ice cream. You
maybe
know,
a vodka tapper.
A little vodka tap.
I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll
you
see.
Know, a nice Pilsner
right.
to go along with it.
It's all good.
No. Hey, it's a great question, right? Because when you're working, do you feel stress?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think most people do.
Right. And when you feel stressed, do you work to the best of your ability?
No.
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 Right? And so you go, oh, so we should make sure that Bonnie, when she feels stress, has a way to not feel stress
mm-hmm.
because as a worker, she'll be a better worker. So that's just plain Econ 101, thinking like
right.
if I'm building a relationship with an employee that I want them to produce, then I should make sure that they're not as stressed out.
Right.
So why don't we do this more often? Because it costs money, again.
And time. I mean, when do people have time to go
well,
de-stress?
Right, because remember, the other teacher who doesn't even have time to pee.
Right.
When do you have time to go to the dark room, lay back on a reclining chair, listening to ambient music with Serenity Now playing in
right.
the background, right?
Exactly.
You'll pee yourself.
Yeah, probably.
Which then, like...
then it causes more problems and more time. Yeah, I get
stress.
It. I get it.
It's a great idea, but I think that's a great point that you bring up. If you're going to make the space for a room for teachers to de-stress, then you also have to be committed to making space in the time of day that a teacher works to be able to then use that space, because mm-hmm. no time means lots of stress. Have a little bit of time, you might balance out some of that stress.
From Newsday.com, Ward Melville High helps staff de-stress with relaxing music and soft lighting. District officials are touting a newly created wellness room at Ward Melville High School as a lesson in serenity, where the surroundings help teachers and staff de-stress over the course of a hectic work day.
I see the word serenity and I'm automatically thrown back to Seinfeld and George Costanza's father yelling, "Serenity,
serenity
now!
No!
Serenity now!" This is not that kind of room.
Well, that's good.
George Costanza's father is not in the...
He's not in the serenity
no,
room
he's
yelling
not in the
at
serenity
you.
Room. So here's an idea, right? We came off of the stressed out teacher and can't even bear going home to be with their own parents. Now here's a school that said, hey, we need to help teachers balance that mm-hmm. stress that accompanies them during the day. Now, it doesn't say anything about the fact that it might contribute to a better evening. My guess is it would, though, because if you're letting go of some of that stress during the day while it's happening, you're not bringing it home with you.
Right, okay? For sure.
So you asked, why don't we all do this?
I think it sounds like a great idea. Add a soft serve ice cream machine. It's perfect.
A little soft serve ice cream. You
maybe
know,
a vodka tapper.
A little vodka tap.
I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll
you
see.
Know, a nice Pilsner
right.
to go along with it.
It's all good.
No. Hey, it's a great question, right? Because when you're working, do you feel stress?
Yeah.
Okay. When
and
you,
I think most people do.
Right. And when you feel stressed, do you work to the best of your ability?
No.
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 Right? And so you go, oh, so we should make sure that Bonnie, when she feels stress, has a way to not feel stress
mm-hmm.
because as a worker, she'll be a better worker. So that's just plain Econ 101, thinking like
right.
if I'm building a relationship with an employee that I want them to produce, then I should make sure that they're not as stressed out.
Right. Right?
So why don't we do this more often? Because it costs money, again.
And time. I mean, when do people have time to go
well,
de-stress?
Right, because remember, the other teacher who doesn't even have time to pee.
Right.
When do you have time to go to the dark room, lay back on a reclining chair, listening to ambient music with Serenity Now playing in the
right.
background, right?
Exactly.
You'll pee yourself.
Yeah, probably.
Which then, like...
then it causes more problems and more time. Yeah, I get
stress.
It. I get it.
It's a great idea, but I think that's a great point that you bring up. If you're going to make the space for a room for teachers to de-stress, then you also have to be committed to making space in the time of day that a teacher works to be able to then use that space, because mm-hmm. no time means lots of stress. Have a little bit of time, you might balance out some of that stress. So they are both teachers from Portland, Oregon, in the public schools. Tim Swinehart, he's the one of the editors of A People's Curriculum for the Earth coming out of Rethinking Schools. Moe Yaname is an editor for Rethinking Schools and currently the author of the article in the print and online version of Rethinking Schools, Because Our Islands Are Our Life. Tim, Moe, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, so climate change, it's all the rage, as they say, and both of you have been hitting this topic either through the book, through your own writings. I looked online, you're all over the place with going after this. What is it about this year that is driving people to talk more about this? Moe, you first.
Sure, thank you. I think for the students at the high school that I am in, we have a very diverse Indigenous community that centers greatly around our Pacific Islander students. And I think for a lot of our students here, they're showing the urgency because their homes are impacted, and we're at a place where they could literally see the changes in sea level rise and how their family's life conditions are also having to alter. For some, it's really about having to move to a different location because of climate change. So the impact, the physical impact, is very visible, as well as the emotional impact for our students who are learning the histories from homelands from here in Portland, Oregon. And so the students are really leading the way in our school community to make sure that their voices are heard, and that their fight and the urgency for the fight is felt as well.
So this, so it's not this, because I hear a lot of people going, well, you know, everybody wants to be like Greta now, and this is just in the news, and it's trendy. And in fact, your piece, Because Our Islands Are Our Life, Moe, in Rethinking Schools, this is where you actually talk about the fact that this is a reality for the kids you teach and their homelands, in their home islands.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, and as I shared in that article, it was the last spring march where our students walked out to organize for climate justice. It was very emotional for a lot of our students who said that they kept imagining the faces of their family members who are back home on the island, as well as just the feeling of needing solidarity right now in thriving and fighting for the existence of their own cultures.
Tim, so question, I'm going to say, do we have global warming, climate change, or climate crisis?
All the above. But okay. I think the language that we use matters. And so I think that we, absolutely in the moment that we're in, have to acknowledge that this is an emergency, that it is a climate crisis, and I think that you see a number of news outlets, actually, many of whom were participating in the Report Climate Now coalition, I think over the last few weeks, have consciously changed some of the language that they're using to acknowledge the, this urgency that Moe was talking about. And if it's all right, I was just going to comment, too, on
sure.
I think Moe raises a couple of important points that, about the activism, for example, of her students at Roosevelt, that's been really sustained activism, and so it's so important and so wonderful that this issue is getting the kind of attention that it is right now because of this global youth movement. But in Portland, we've seen students all the way back to 4 years ago when it was some of Moe's students that wrote letters to all the social studies teachers in the district, and I was one of the people that got one of those letters pointing out how shortcoming our textbooks were here when it came to acknowledging the climate crisis and also embodying the experiences of students like Moe's that are that are experiencing this crisis in such profound personal ways.
Well, I think, I mean, that's a problem, right? Because if it gets taught sometimes, I think it's strictly relegated to the realm of some type of scientific inquiry that we have to learn about and factual. And the reality is that this is a human condition in which real people, Moe, as you pointed out, are being, you know, affected right now, right at this very moment. It's a living issue. And so climate change, I'm glad to see that we've moved into talking about it as a change in climate, but the crisis word, I think, is even more strong. As teachers, though, and Tim, you just talked about this, getting materials, is that then, I want to throw this back to you, Tim, and then we'll come back to Moe, but then motivation for a people's curriculum for the Earth, which you co-edited with Bill Bigelow, is that motivation behind the lack of resources for writing that book?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think when we first started thinking about the book and conceptualizing it, we were very aware that there was, especially as social studies teachers, people in the humanities, that there was a real lack of resources and examples of how you approach this issue. From, say, a social justice perspective, from a racial justice perspective, how do you tie into the economics and social conditions and cultural issues that surround all, you know, that are all sort of interconnected within the climate crisis? And so, you know, one of our intentions was to start pulling together a lot of good work that was already happening in Portland and other places, where people were trying to tell this story in a way that would reach students and tap into their ability to empathize and also to begin to see themselves as change makers, people who weren't just overwhelmed by the enormity of the crisis, but also see themselves as capable of participating in a movement to create social change.
So, Moe, I want to go back then to your piece then. So talk to me, when I say 1.5, what does that mean?
Sure. The students are fighting for it to stop the warming of the Earth's atmosphere.
Okay.
And as we're leaning on the history and the teachings of indigenous Pacific climate warriors who are fighting to lower carbon emissions and stop fossil fuels all around the planet, the students are learning that even as the world leaders negotiate 2.0 degrees Celsius in places like Paris Climate Talks, that won't be enough for many of our island nations and territories, that because of the sea level rise and the low-lying islands and atolls, we need to get a commitment of no more than warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius all over the planet. And so in learning about this, the students organized a Pacific Islander Youth Climate Summit for the first time here in Portland last May. And they brought in climate activists who are indigenous Pacific Islanders from the 350 Pacific Climate Warriors. And as we learned about 1.5 together, they decided that they need to do some kind of a call into many different communities all around Portland metro area to understand that what they're fighting for is the existence of their islands and their homes, and that we need to fight so that we can all thrive here together at a 1.5 degrees Celsius commitment.
And so the 1.5 is really coming from a scientific fact, in a sense, that this has to be the number, because anything that doesn't reach that is catastrophic. Is that an overstatement or not?
No, not at all, especially when we have students in our classrooms who are connected to many of the Micronesian islands and the Melanesian islands and the Polynesian islands, who many of whom are already creating next steps for how to preserve their islands, how to sustain, but also in the worst cases, how to prepare to move from their islands to a safer location. So that is absolutely something that's on the radar and in the students' personal lives and a lot of the families' lives that are part of our school.
So when somebody says, you two don't sound like teachers, you sound like activists, what's your reaction?
You know, I think the first thing that I would say is that I'm both.
Okay.
I think that we're living in a time that, at least for me, demands nothing less. I'm a teacher, I'm a father, I'm a colleague, and I think that, you know, all of those roles demand that I'm doing everything that I can in this moment to both bring this issue to my students in ways that they can connect to personally, and also really feel empowered to take this on and to be part of something larger than themselves. I think that this is a time where that distinction is maybe not as helpful between teaching and activism as we have assumed it to be in the past.
Moe, go ahead.
Sure, I agree, and I wanted to echo what Tim said, that I think as educators for social justice, it is absolutely important that we address climate change. And in my classroom, we're always talking, as I know many Rethinking Schools teachers and Zen Education Project teachers, we try to have students imagine a more just world, using their critical thinking, using their empathy and their compassion for different peoples all over the world. And in it, if we are to even address racial justice or social justice issues, then we're going to find that all of these different issues are incorporated in the fight for climate justice. So, yes, it is activism, and it's activism for a more just world so that students can imagine something different for their very near future.
Well, and I appreciate what you just said there, too, because this idea, and I obviously put that out there as a teasing question more than anything, because I don't know how teachers aren't activists, because what is our role if it's not to engage the students in front of us in some vision of some type of better life, which sounds, I know, it's too utopian, but What I love about this Zen Education Project and Rethinking Schools and the books and the articles, though, is that this is, you all are teachers who have then written about and actually telling people how to do these things, that you're actually doing this. This isn't somebody like me who's a dean of a school of education writing theoretically about social justice and its effect on students of color. You're all doing that, and I love every time I get to speak with somebody associated with either of the organizations, it just empowers me again to go, there are teachers like you out there doing this work. Tim, in the book, now this question is, you're going to say impossible, but if I want a chapter that's going to hook me right in, mm-hmm. what part of the book should I look at first?
You know, I would point people, one thing is just at the very beginning of the book, there's a transcribed TED Talk from Van Jones called Plastics and Poverty, and it's something that I think, for one, does a really nice job of showing how ecological issues are also social justice issues. And so I've used that a number of times with students and adults in various settings really successfully. And then, we're talking about the climate crisis. There is the sort of the heart of the book is chapter three, which is a variety of resources, some readings, a number of role plays, simulations, and different activities that really try to bring this issue home for kids in ways that they're connecting to, you know, how is the climate crisis a struggle for indigenous rights in so many of the ways that Moe has spoken to, and also, I think one of the things that my co-editor Bill Bigelow, who's a mentor for both Moe and I, one of the things that he says that I really appreciate is that this is, it's a huge, overwhelming issue, but it doesn't mean that we can't teach about it in ways that are playful and creative and think about the ways that we're engaging students with it. And so something like the Thingamabob simulation that puts students in the position of being CEOs that are responsible both for maximizing profits to shareholders, but then also have to kind of be aware of this these increasing levels of carbon that keep creeping up, and trying to win chocolate bars all the time. Something like that is really memorable, you know, and it's something that my students will say years later, you know, that they remember, both that it was fun, but it was frustrating. And, you know, and so I think some of the ways that the book can be helpful for people who maybe don't know exactly how to approach the subject is that it just offers a variety of different tools that are really ready to go.
Yeah, they are. They really are. So Moe, 1.5 degrees because the poem, how does it speak to you?
For me, 1.5, I can't even say it in just a few words, but it's everything. I think even from the way that it was created, our students from the Pacific Island Club here, that is about 39 students strong in our school, invited Pacific Climate Warriors to help lead the way in facilitating what kind of action they want to take as diaspora Pacific Islander students here on the West Coast. And in doing so, they wanted to create a collective piece that was in solidarity with their families back home, but also that spoke to youth, Pacific Islander and Indigenous youth all over that might be hearing the poem. And we tailored together with 39 students. Everybody has a line in this poem, and everyone's story comes out in it. And it took a lot of pain and hope and being there with each other to write it. And when it came together, it was just really liberating and beautiful to see the students come together to honor each other's stories and to fight together. And then last Friday at the climate strike here in Portland, when students had a walkout, our Pacific Islander Club joined the Pacific Climate Warriors up at the microphones at the rally. And they did the 1.5 poem together in front of a huge mass of thousands of people. And you could hear them. It wasn't just the words that they were speaking that they wrote together, but it was also in the way that they read it. You could feel that they were right back mentally and in their heart. They were right back home in their island or in their parents' and grandparents' islands. And you could feel the emotion and you could feel the heart of everything that they wrote. And I think that the crowd felt that the young people are here to fight for change and fight together for each other in a way that brings humanity and hope to all of us.
Tim, you had a comment? Or?
Oh, I was just, I had the honor of being there and listening and you know, I know how incredibly moving it was as a, you know, audience member to see that and watch that. And then I know that in debriefing with my students after the strike, that listening to Moe's students read and share this poem with all of the emotion and heart that she's describing, that it was one of the biggest takeaways from the entire day for a lot of my students was hearing that poem.
See, and there again, so we go from an activity dealing with reality and social justice with climate that turns into a classroom opportunity that turns into a movement that's then used as an example. And that's the work, I think, that people forget that teachers can do, should be doing. And so, you know, looking at, pitch it again, the Zinn Education Project, Rethinking Schools, the work that all of you do associated with that, that helps the teachers that I work with here, whenever I present anything from either of the organizations, I always get the, I didn't know this was out there. And so that's the part. But, you know, Climate Warriors, Moe, I wanted to hit on that before because I love that term, Climate Warriors. Your students refer to themselves as that? They see themselves as that?
Yes, and they've actually been welcomed in by the Pacific Climate Warriors of 350 Pacific. And it is a group of phenomenal indigenous activists from different Pacific islands, starting with Kathy Detmel Kitchener and Mac Portofano, who were the two people that helped facilitate the earlier Pacific Islander Youth Climate Summit that we had here at Roosevelt in the spring. And the students, a lot of the time, they connect to our fight for ethnic studies here in our school as well, where many of the students that are fighting for climate justice education are also the same students that have fought for and won to get ethnic studies in all of our high schools. And many of them see the overlap in that, where it's really to make our own communities visible and to lift up the people that have come before us who are doing the good fight. And Pacific Climate Warriors are constantly the ones that our students, especially Pacific Islander students and Indigenous students, bring up as the, they call them mentors of history, is a phrase that my students came up with last year. Sometimes it's people in your life, and sometimes it's people you never get to meet, but you learn about, and you are embraced from hearing their story. And so the Pacific Climate Warriors of 350 Pacific, their stories that we hear about, their activism, their movements, even their blockadias against the coal ships, these are the things that give a lot of hope and optimism to many of our students that there are so many different ways that you can fight together in a movement such as climate justice.
Well, Tim Swinehart, he is a teacher in Portland, Oregon, an editor of the book, A People's Curriculum for the Earth, from Out of Rethinking Schools, along with Bill Bigelow. Moe Yaname, editor at Rethinking Schools and current author of the article in the current edition of Rethinking Schools, Because Our Islands Are Our Life. I want to say to both of you what we say here at Busted Pencils. You guys truly busted pencils.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you two, your students may be climate warriors, but you two really are also climate warriors. And please, thank you for that work. And if for the listener, again, go to check out Rethinking Schools, check out the Zen Education Project, and make sure you pick up your copy. Tim, Moe, thanks, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
Time now for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
Education becomes most rich and alive when it confronts the reality of the moral conflict in the world.
My thanks to Tim and Moe, as well as their amazing students. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and keep busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk, Busted Pencils Radio.